Film Vault. Welcome, everyone, to the Film Vault. That is Anderson. I'm Brian Bishop, your host for today. Oh, we're talking, well, I don't know if we are talking, but one of us will be discussing The Little Mermaid. Also, a documentary assigned to us, and a, I would call it bleak Russian film assigned to us.
You call that bleak? Beanpole? Bleak? Mm. Brian, what's the matter with you? Why'd you get so soft?
What I got? Oh, because I consider it bleak?
Beanpole's maybe the funniest movie I've seen in this calendar year.
I can see how you would find it ironically funny. Mm-hmm. I don't think there's a genuine laugh to be had.
There's nothing funny about this movie. I'm messing with you. And anyone like
I thought at a certain point it got so absurdly bleak that you were laughing.
The other three listeners who might know of Beanpole, they probably found that amusing. They probably understood that I was making some humor attempts there.
Glad.
Right. You know, there is one funny moment, and it's actually when the term beanpole is uttered towards the end. I did laugh. I don't think I was supposed to. Had to do with a bus and a beanpole being hit by it. And it was just so casual. This bus rider is like, what happened? Because the trolley stops. I don't know. Some beanpole got hit by a bus. Beanpole, I guess, is...
It's slang for a type of person.
Slang for a tall woman in Russia.
Oh, boy.
Actually, it's slang for a tall person. I think it's the translation of, because it's slang for a tall person in English.
I like to think of it as a very specific.
Perhaps it is. Perhaps it transliterates to pole of bean.
I probably said too much, but honestly, I did not spoil. Like, you don't know.
You didn't say much.
I didn't say, I said a lot.
The accident, the aforementioned accident is a bit of a red herring.
Well, now you've said too much.
I've said too much.
Jesus, Brian. For those of you who may watch this movie, we'll get there in a minute. You're not going to be watching it for twists.
We should do a watch along.
Or turns. There's a lot to be said about Beanpole, which was assigned to us by Nick Eats Cake. And I had a very, very nice conversation with Nick Eats Cake. And, you know, I say that a lot. I have a lot of great conversations with our listeners. Usually people who support the program in that capacity really like the show. They really like movies quite a lot. Love movies, like the show.
Ironically, the host of the show doesn't even love movies that much.
One of the hosts, right? That's right. And I got to speak with Nick Eats Cake. I've been going back and forth with him for literally years now, I think, via email. Very familiar with the name and the idea of Nick Eats Cake, but I'd never spoken with him.
The idea of the man.
And wow, what a...
specter.
What a fun conversation. It was the kind of conversation where if we recorded it, I think it would have... It would have been praised.
Good bonus content. Yeah. Right.
From his point of view, though, what he brought to the table. He sees things...
Could have been the making of episode at the end of the HBO show.
Succinctly, yeah. It was one of those. It was a very honest, educated conversation about film.
Good. I'm glad that you and Mr. Eats Cake had a good talk.
I was drinking coffee. Don't do that to me when I take a sip. Hey, later this week, we're going to be talking a little top five princesses.
That's right.
To Brian's delight. And it was good of you to show up, Logan. Oh, good of you to show up, Avery, considering your feel on the females.
He already told me the tapes may be lost from that episode.
The tapes are going to be lost?
Yeah, they're going to be lost, yeah.
Florence Brummer has assigned us top five princesses.
I brought my gear just so I was ready to delete it.
And it comes out at a good time with the old Little Mermaid coming out as we record this that just came out, just got released.
Did you enjoy it?
Little Mermaid?
That's right.
We'll see if I enjoy your conversation about it, but that'll be about the extent of my involvement.
Avery, did you see it, or am I in on this alone?
I did not. Would you rather see Fast X or Little Mermaid?
Probably Fast.
That's the right choice.
Yeah. Just so I can have
You haven't seen both.
Smart call.
There's one person here who's seen both movies.
I just think I'd probably get a little bit more from Momoa's character, right? Than I would the entirety.
Momoa is matched by Melissa McCarthy.
We'll get there.
Okay.
I would like to say real quick that listener, friend of the program, friend of mine, Eric Robbins, he brought up the fact that, and I'm not going to say too much, but I'm going to go back to Sisu here for a second. Sisu, everyone's favorite Nazi hunting
underwater scene
film. Yes. Did you see that?
Yes, I did.
So he emailed it to us or just to me?
No. I just saw it recently in the underwater scene.
Oh, the underwater scene.
I don't know. He sent an email specifically about that.
Yeah, he sent an email
about
because that's the one. That's the one plot hole or thing that we really had to take a leap.
The one plot hole.
Well, I mean, the one big one. Where it's like we both knew
Is this under the laws of physics? Is this possible?
I'm not going to give too much away right here. But Eric, who is a very intelligent fella, he pointed out the fact that there is, and I'm not going to say anything for those of you who still have not seen it. I get it. You know, it's not that accessible yet. And I would imagine a bunch of you listening.
Someone's going to pick it up. It's going to be,
It'll probably get remade, let's be honest. But
we encourage you to see that.
From the director of John Wick 7, come Sisu.
From Spike Lee.
Sisu 5. Okay. The underwater sequence is plausible.
Oh.
And all you have to do.
100% medically accurate?
All you have to do is think about CPR and how that works. And apparently there is 80% left. That's all. We'll just leave it at that.
Okay.
There is still good stuff to be found in there.
And
for those of you who have seen the movie, you know what we're talking about.
Yeah.
For those of you who have not, you're still...
That's why when you're in an enclosed space, it takes a while for you to suffocate. It's not just immediate because you're not 100% oxygen, 100%
I think
carbon
you said
dioxide.
Too much.
Yeah, it feels like you're kind of crossing the line here. But all you have to think of is CPR, right? Like
CPR.
Mouth to mouth. Like, right, I mean, what are you doing there?
Yeah, because, yeah, okay, all right.
Thank you, Eric, for making me feel like an idiot 3 weeks after the fact. Okay, that's all I have to bring the program. The entirety, yeah.
That's all you got?
Yeah. Also, we're going to be talking about a criminally overlooked documentary called This Mountain Life.
Yes.
From another friend of the program.
I enjoyed it.
Filmmaker, friend of the program, and Grant Baldwin. Every week when you listen to this this show, each episode is bookended with a very catchy score.
That's right.
And that was gifted to us by Grant Baldwin himself.
Wow. The guy who did the three guys, the guy who did the new music, this listener, and the director of this movie are the same name. That's crazy.
Wait, the listener?
The guy, whoever did the music, this listener is you're talking about, Grant Baldwin, and the director of This Mountain Life, all the same name.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah. They're all the same person.
Oh, Jesus.
Not to be
Christ.
Confused with Eric Robbins, who I was just talking about, who gave us the Sisu medical update. But I'm not sure that Grant Baldwin actually made that. He might have just commissioned that for another film that he had made. He's the director of Just Eat It. He and his wife make films. I had Brian watch Just Eat It a number of years ago.
You tricked me.
I did. It wasn't nice.
I felt bad because I liked the movie. Anderson assigned it to me without telling me the fucking director of the movie assigned it to us.
The two filmmakers who are actively involved in the movie.
Well, because my review was, I like the movie. Honestly, the weakest part was the two people who were filming themselves eating.
It's a great movie about...
supremely unlikable.
I didn't say that. I said the weakest part.
Just Eat It is a very interesting documentary that we're not covering today, but it is all about this couple that ventures out on... Much like Morgan Spurlock's Super Size Me, they venture out on sustaining themselves only on expired food. And like I told Grant when I just talked to him last week, and I brought it up on the show plenty of times, I still use some of the tricks most often I use the expired egg trick. And if you have like eggs that like expired yesterday or something, I'll do it a week later. Like, because we don't get to a whole lot of eggs in the house.
It's floating, right?
Yeah. You drop it in some water, like a glass of water. If it sinks, you're good to go. If it floats, that's when you know it's, I don't even know what you do with an expired egg. You freeze it. Like, you can't throw it in the trash.
Throw it to the neighbor.
Chuck it to the neighbor. It smells so bad.
It is rotten. I mean, it has a rotten smell.
But he and his wife have made a new one called This Mountain Life. Actually, it's been out for a couple of years now. And
the weakest part was about them trying to...
They're not in it at all. I'm excited to talk to you about This Mountain Life. I'm excited to talk to the listeners about This Mountain Life. And everyone can watch it if you're a Prime member. And it's streaming right there. Very accessible. Goes down smooth. What a fucking movie. So we'll talk about that in a bit.
That's all.
And then we'll also talk about Little Mermaid, I guess.
Thank you for not calling it the big sexy movie of the week.
And Beanpool.
Also big sexy.
Or The Big Mermaid. That would have been equally offensive.
What else am I flickfesting? I got something else.
You said Oz.
Oz, Lynch Oz.
Oh, yeah, Lynch Oz.
Oh, Lynch Oz.
Fuck to the yes. All right, so more about... Yes, fuck to the yes, Lynch Oz. Okay, we'll talk about all of those movies. Let's get to a little fanfliction.
Yeah, what have the listeners seen?
Fanfliction.
What are the fans of the show seen?
Compiled.
Listeners.
By the Mitch Burns.
That's long enough for their fans.
Only two reviews of Little Mermaid.
Oh.
First one from Dana Hubble Minzy. Little Mermaid, very good.
Succinct.
That sounded like a Brian review. That's Colonel right. Bluegrass on Twitter. The wife wanted to go see The Little Mermaid, so I stayed home and jammed toothpicks under my fingernails instead.
Wow. Rude.
But potentially accurate. Kurt Graver.
That's not much of a review.
On Facebook.
He didn't even see it.
I'll be honest. That wasn't a great review.
Oh, I'm excited. Kurt Graver on Facebook, Fast X. Jason Momoa is the reason to see this, but it is not worth 2.5 hours of my time. I disagree, Kurt. This is not good, and I ultimately was
Please editorialize.
This is not good, and I ultimately was rooting for Momoa to destroy the family.
How could you not? That's what I think I would be doing.
That's right. Take out the kid.
Oh, please.
There's a top
please
five
kill
there,
the kid.
Where you hate the protagonist so much that you find yourself rooting for the antagonist. It's a mouthy, wordy title of a topic, but I like it.
Most Marvel movies. Most Marvel films.
I tend to agree. Yeah. If it's not Spider-Man, I want to see them all die. Mm. Yeah. That's why I loved Endgame.
That's right.
Whichever one it was.
Thanos was the hero.
Yeah, he really was. And I'm not saying that in jest.
Infinity War.
He really kind of was. Like, for the planet's sake.
That's right.
I'm a fan of the planet.
He's a principal villain.
I like that Mother Nature. I feel like she needs a fighting chance.
Antonio Pena on Twitter. It Ain't Over was great, informative, sweet, and touching. Got a little dusty at the end. Worth watching in the theater for baseball fans, not just Yankee fans. Succession finale. Need to watch again, but please cover it on the next episode. Love to hear the guys what the guys thought, but not you, Bald.
Should we spoiler?
I watched it.
No, you didn't. We heard from your wife how you wandered in at one point and said, why is there a sticker?
No, like, I was on the couch. I didn't remember.
I mean, didn't remember the sticker? You didn't watch
the sticker.
Brian, you didn't watch this.
I watched most of it.
You can join us if you like, but I think we should do like a 10-minute little like
Kendall was a
Patreon. Patreon bonus only.
I mean, for the end of one of the greatest shows in recent memory.
Yeah, we should do that. Yeah.
Yeah.
Hey, spoiler. Yeah. No, let's get back to...
You mean no?
That's fine. Let's get back to... who is that listener who just...
Antonio Pena.
Mr. Pena, what did he say about It Ain't Over?
He said it was great, informative, sweet, and touching.
You know what? I saw it as well. I agree.
Was say,
and
you
we'll be flipping that probably next week, the week after.
All right. Very good. Very, very good.
Ken Cunningham on Twitter. This weekend, I watched The Five Came Back documentary series and its companion films.
What does that mean? There's like 30 of them.
That's a great question. Powerful and heartbreaking. Everyone needs to sit down and be made to watch George Stevens' Nazi concentration camps.
I still need to see that. However, Five Came Back, I can sign off on. It is a great miniseries. I read the book beforehand, which is also fantastic. Apparently, it's out of print. I was going to buy it for a friend just recently, and like the cheapest one I could find was on Amazon used, and it was like $150.
Oh,
so I'm like, I don't know if my friend would appreciate it enough.
What is the book? What's the book called?
It's called Five Came Back, and it's about five of the top working directors at the time. Houston, Stevens.
What's his face from A Beautiful Life? Wonderful Life.
Yeah. Capra. Ford.
Oh, and Ford. Yeah.
And there's a fifth one that I'm drawing a blank on right now. He's probably the biggest. Anyways, the five of them dropped.
Was it De Palma?
No. Way after. De Palma came way after. But they all dropped their very lucrative Hollywood
PTA
careers. And enlisted, essentially, and went and started making propaganda films during World War II. And it really shaped the second half of their careers in every respect. It's very, very good. It's a great history of cinema as well. Big heavy hitters, even though I'm drawing a blank here all these years later. But yeah, to watch all of their companion films is it's quite the undertaking. I don't
Diablo Cody.
Please. Five came back.
You're hurting the show.
Is that it?
Bobby Obvious on Instagram. You hurt my feelings.
Tarantino.
William Wyler.
It was Tarantino.
Oh, okay.
That makes sense. Oh, Mr. Wyler. Not Billy Wilder, but William Wyler. All right, go ahead.
You hurt my feelings.
So I can just start over. I trampled.
Bobby Obvious on Instagram. You hurt my feelings. A very small stakes relatable dramedy that fills the Woody Allen hole in today's films. This is clearly for all the mommies out there.
I can't believe this already came out. This was on my top five list for summer, and I need to see it. It's already been released, eh? Mm. I was busy up in San Francisco this weekend, if you must know.
Is that code?
My buddy Brian Border and Paul Harper invited me up. It was kind of like a birthday thing, and nice. It was a surprise. We went out to dinner. They dragged me. Brian dragged me to San Jose.
From San Francisco.
And I was furious.
Oh my, that's a haul.
But it was fun. It was really fun ripping on him because we have that kind of relationship. So I was just ripping on the entire car for bringing me out there. I'm like, what the? Dude, we're almost halfway back home now.
You're like, I just drove through here an hour and a half ago.
I had. And then we get to a restaurant and he's fucking with me, telling me this vegan fusion. And I'm like losing my mind. Like a lot of people like to see me mad, right?
That's right.
And then it turned out that it was a, he's all right, dinner was over. And it's like, all right, let's go have some drinks around here. And he says, why don't you check your email? Checked my email. And there was my ticket for Duran Duran that night, right around the corner from where we were eating. So we went to the SAP Center and watched Duran Duran. And it
was
fucking glorious. So thank you very
first
much.
First time you've seen them since when?
Since I've only seen them once before. And it was
once in your life?
Yeah, yeah.
Your favorite band you've seen once in your life?
I liked them when I was very young and then got into punk rock and kind of turned my back on them for a number of years. And yeah, so I saw him once, maybe 20 years ago, and it was like only three of the guys.
That is hard to believe.
This was four of the guys. Andy's still not a part of the band, which I'm fine with. But yeah, Nick's still got it. I mean, they're not like doing somersaults or anything. He's got a bit of a belly, but he doesn't care. He's wearing a tight black T-shirt. All right. Oh, it was a good time. Thank you very much, Mr. Border.
Did they play all the songs? Was there a song you would hope they would play?
Yeah, of course. I mean, my two favorite songs they didn't play because they're a little more...
Off the greatest
The Chauffeur is probably my favorite song of all time. The Chauffeur by Duran Duran. It's like the most moody. No. Oh. But they did open up with a very obscure song from their first album that was not a single, which I was very surprised by, and I loved it too. Because Chic opened up for him, and Chic was playing all these covers and getting, you know, it was the most 80s night you could imagine.
Sure, sure.
And then Duran Duran came out, and the crowd was still feeling it and ready to go, right? And then they played this really moody song about a boat from the first album that no one really knows, right?
So, what did they close with? What are they come
Rio,
back
they closed, they closed with Rio.
Yeah, sure.
Which I actually appreciated for the first time in my life, I think. It's a very complex song when you see it live. A lot going on with that song.
Nice. All did right. they play Ordinary World?
Yes, they did.
Awesome.
But you know what? Ordinary World was kind of ruined because Simon went on like a, I'm not kidding, like a 3-minute, Simon Le Bon, 3-minute diatribe about what's going on in the Ukraine and how it's
in
bad.
In the middle of the song?
No, right before the song and how it should be an ordinary world. Like that was the whole lead up was about how Putin's bad. Things are not ordinary or good in the Ukraine right now. And it should be more like this. And then they bust into ordinary world.
Oh, wow.
But my favorite guy, Nick Rhodes, was wearing like a, the craziest you can imagine. It was just like blue and yellow. And he looked like he was like straight out of the Willy Wonka chocolate factory. Oh, it was good times. Oh, all right. So,
sweet.
Thank you, Mr. Brian Mortar, for that. And as I was telling you, Brian.
Yes.
There's you, Brian.
That's right.
There's better Brian, which is Brian McCauley.
Okay.
And then there's best Brian, which is Brian Border, but he spells his name correctly, so he doesn't fall into this.
Oh,
name.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Can I at least be, if there's better and best, can I at least be good Brian?
You're just Brian.
Sure.
Yeah.
All right. You know what? I'll take it. I'll take it.
I'm trying to think of a bad word. You're Beanpole Brian.
I am kind of a Beanpole.
I need to keep the alliteration going.
Beanpole Brian.
All right, where do we start?
Let's just go right into Beanpole.
No, why don't you start with the big, sexy little
don't
mermaid.
Say, don't say sexy.
I know, it's
highly anticipated.
The Little Mermaid. Not sexy, but in theaters now. 2023 film directed by Rob Marshall. You might know him from Chicago. Starring Halle Bailey, Melissa McCarthy, Jonah Howard King, Javier Bardem, David, the voices of David Diggs, Jacob Tremblay, and Awkwafina.
It's Halle Bailey.
That's what I said.
Not to be confused with Halle Berry.
Well, that's funny you mentioned that because as soon as the credits started to roll, Chrissy leans over to me and goes, "Who is Halle Berry? I didn't recognize her." I'm like, "It's a different actress. You misread the name." Hmm. I imagine a lot of people.
Those have to be related. She has to be.
Nope. Right? Different last name.
How would you be?
But I'm saying in terms of, I feel like, is she young enough to have been named after
Halle
Berry?
Oh, I imagine so.
Is what I'm saying.
I mean, that's she's a famous actor. Anyway, well, I don't know the history of Halle Bailey. 68% of Rotten Tomatoes is in theaters now. What do you guys think of this movie?
68 seems high.
I actually think it's just about right. Okay, so while this is by no means a great movie, it's honestly...
It's a movie.
It is a movie, undoubtedly.
You can see it in theaters.
It is a remake, or I guess a reboot, a reimagining of the 1989 animated classic that really kind of turned things around for Disney, at least in terms of Disney animation. And this is the live-action/CGI adaptation of the original Hans Christian Andersen story. And now while this is by no means a great movie, it's hard for me to imagine anyone in just good faith, good conscience, giving this a negative review. Like, it's perfectly above average. It's a 3-star movie. There's not too much not to like about it. There's not too much to get excited about. There's just, it's enjoyable, entertaining for the kids. I'm not going to say critic proof because that's not true. There are weaknesses. Number one, it's dark. And I don't mean like dark in tone, like it's dimly lit, especially for the underwater scenes. And I said that to Christy. I'm like, that movie was hard to see sometimes. That's just your bad eyes. I'm like, no, I don't think it is. And I read a Variety article that was summarizing a bunch of reviews.
You're reading articles about this movie after the fact, Brian?
Well, I was looking up box office stuff. But reading an article from Variety, it said many of the critiques have centered around the dim lighting, among other things. And yes. Yeah, it is hard. It is unnecessary.
There were a lot of critiques about how dark Little Mermaid was.
That's right. Unnecessarily,
because he doesn't get it. I don't think.
Oh, I didn't hear you say.
Because of the lead.
What?
Yeah.
Because she's dark skinned. Oh, yes. Right.
That's the other.
Did the
thing,
hair? So, did the hair on the back of your neck stand up when you read somebody saying that you were right? Essentially, did you get so excited?
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. Oh, not just that's the only hair I got left. And yes, it completely went erect. And funny you should mention the. We all know the controversy if as it is.
I don't.
Okay, well, there are people who take their Little Mermaid very seriously. A lot of conservative pundits who think that the Little Mermaid has no business being a woman of color.
Oh.
Because I guess Ariel
historically,
and the original
mermaids
Hans
were
Christian
always
Anderson.
Black.
Sure, of course.
Always and white.
The Hans Christian Andersen version described her as very light.
So they took a break from the Hamilton message boards and went over to Little Mermaid for a
this
second.
This is their new ire. This is the new target of their ire. And it's funny because the movie, I even cynical, my most cynical nature even came out and thought to myself, oh God, they have to jam, you know, whatever representation everywhere, even in places
God,
where it
I
doesn't
hope we
matter.
Don't have any evil listeners who are just going to take this. This clip and jam it down.
Sure.
You're looking at one.
And so I thought that, you know, in my worst moments, and then in the movie, they actually give us a lot of context, which is, and I don't know how familiar you guys are with the original animated
0%
film.
0%. Oh, the original.
It's fine.
I remember the original.
Okay, well, I remember it had inappropriate penises on the cover.
I don't believe they said this in the movie, but they make it explicit here. King Triton has like a whole bunch of daughters, including Ariel. You know,
oh,
a whole
you got
bunch of mermaid daughters, and they are in this movie, the daughters of the seven seas, right? Mm-hmm. They're the princesses of the seven seas. So when they all come together,
she came from the Black Sea.
When they all come together, it's for different reasons.
I'm not making jokes.
Well no, done. No, you're right. They come from the different regions of the world. Uh-huh. So there's like a very pale blonde one who's obviously like Norwegian of some sort, and Ariel is actually the princess of like the Caribbean, and they go to like an island, an unnamed island, but it's clearly Haiti or Jamaica or one of those, you know.
That's that makes it even worse. How dare this movie try and represent actual human beings that live around the globe?
The diversity of a global population
should have taken place in Denmark.
That's right. Sure. Hans Christian Andersen.
Mm-hmm.
Could I get, just stay with what you know, Disney. Yeah. So anyway, there's additional music in here. All the original songs, all the songs you know and love, you know, Under the Sea, Kiss the Girl. The Kiss the Girl sequence is quite lovely. It's quite fun and
dusty.
Enjoyable.
Did you get dusty in this?
No, it's not that kind of movie. It's pretty silly. But there are additional songs by Lin-Manuel Miranda, so that's enjoyable. The theater, just for exposition, was probably two-thirds full at like 1 o'clock on a Friday. Majority 5 to 13-year-old girls.
Well, school's still in session. What's going on?
No, these are girls that either skipped, got out early, had a day off, or whatever. Yeah, we took her out of school. We
you
were in La Quinta.
Took her out of school. You were on vacation.
We were on vacation.
Right.
It was a road game for us. Aforementioned Melissa McCarthy absolutely killed it. She's the Momoa of this movie. Like, she sunk her teeth into it. She was just the right level of over the top camp. Even Halle Bailey was fantastic. Great singer. Enjoyed her very much. The guys, Javier Bardem and Jonah Howard King, who I'm not familiar with. A little.
Yeah, what's Javier doing? Because he seemed uncomfortable
checked out.
In the trailers.
He seemed checked out for much of the movie. Like he was really just there for a paycheck.
Now, it wouldn't be the first time I've seen Javier kind of like a fish out of water.
Oh, really?
Didn't he already do this for Pirates? Didn't he already do this kind of undersea bullshit? The villain in Five
now,
or something?
Now I have a vague recollection. Maybe you can look it up. Javier Bardem was in like a kid's movie that Tessa watches on Netflix. I'm like, what the fuck is Javier Bardem doing in this movie? Mm-hmm. He's one of our finest actors and he's slumming it with like kids movies. Mm. Anyway.
So are you. Up. So there's that.
And it's also too long. It's 2 hours and 21 minutes.
Jeez.
It's far. The original, if you remember.
Toothpicks do feel pretty good.
No Country for Old Men.
That's the one. No, that's the one she's obsessed with right now. The original one was like 88 minutes. Like, it's brisk.
And what, are the songs going longer? Are there more songs?
No, in fact, there are a couple more.
More story. They spent a long time explaining the different seas and the different regions of the world. No, I'm
very brief,
world.
Actually. They did cut out, they actually cut out the entire, remember the subplot where Sebastian the Crab is trying to be cooked by the French chef?
He's
the
not French trying chef to be, but he's trying to be a voice.
He's absurd. Yes, he's absurd. He's obsessed with the crab, and he wants to cook the crab. Cut out entirely. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Brian, you let off with the review saying that it was very middling and it's really...
No, I didn't say middling. I said, while not great, there's not no great. Above really average nothing. Film.
You said above average?
Yes.
All right.
Three-star movie.
It was like neither here nor there. It's kind of like, what you expect? It's kind of just... It sounds very milquetoasty. My point is there's so many movies that you go to see, and it seems like that's almost like a positive in your eyes.
Did it do what Lion King did, where it was just like a shot-for-shot remake?
No.
In a lot of ways, yes. In some ways, no. But I will say that in the context of your kid may want to see this, this will not be a waste of your time. You can sit and watch it with them, and you're not going to be like, you know, miserable and offended at how dumb it is. It's good. It's fine. It's above average. It's not great. I don't see this... Even, I don't know, maybe a special effects award Oscar nomination.
Say in your top 10 at the end of the year.
No.
It'll be like up for song or something.
Yeah,
it'll be in the top 10 at the end of the year.
But,
Rotten Tomatoes might do something different still. It might like actually escalate for
that's
some
true.
Unknown reason, and then that could change everything in Brian's
book. Depending on the, you know, further.
Do you remember when Nope just was, not Nope, it was the first one, Get Out.
Oh, Get Out.
Get Out was just out of nowhere was Brian's number one movie of the year.
Oh, I love that's
just
a great
out
movie.
Of fucking nowhere. It was so bizarre.
It was not nowhere. It was out of the fact it was a great movie.
The original Puss in Boots.
Puss in Boots. Okay. All right. Oh, I'm glad we did that. Thank you, Brian. I feel like the show is a service, and it is to people with kids. And I still like if I'm listening, I'm imagining that, you know, Atticus is kind of tugging at my shirt saying, daddy, daddy. I mean, it's a bizarre world that I'm imagining, but like he's asking me about this movie and I'm sidestepping it. And I just heard your review. I still have no idea if I should go or not. You know what I mean? Yeah. I still don't. I have not been sold.
So with this
one way
movie,
or the other.
With this movie, you're probably in a self-selecting sample. Like your kid is dragging you to see this, or they don't give a shit. In which case, you're off the hook. And this is a perfectly streamable movie. This is a great way to kill 2.5 hours on a Saturday if it's raining. This will come out, I assume, in a couple of months. Mm-hmm. So you could do much, much, much worse.
Check it out in September when it comes to Disney.
No, completely.
Woo! All right, what do you want to move on to? Do you want to get the bends and move on to Beanpole?
Oh, no, I don't know if I can do that.
Do we want to take a break before we
you know
slam
what?
Into
do,
Beanpole?
I'll do mine, which Brian has not seen, and then we'll take a break, and then we'll come back, and we'll do the two that we have seen together. So I'm going to talk a little bit about Lynch Oz. We all remember Room 237, right?
Yes.
I don't know what that is.
And
does it involve mermaids?
Room 237 was a really fantastic look at The Shining. And there was a number of directors, filmmakers, artists, the five of them, I believe, all speaking to what they think The Shining really is. You're joking when you say you don't remember.
Yeah, of course I remember. I think it was a lot more than five, but I can't be.
I believe there was five different theories everywhere, everything from like the, it was Kubrick's announcing to the world that he faked the moon landing to it was all about Native American genocide.
Sure. Some are a bit far-fetched, but then a few made sense.
The woman believed that it was all about minotaurs somehow, and she actually made a compelling argument. That was a whole lot of fun. However, it was completely like, you know, Looney Tunes for the most part. Now we got one called Lynch.
That was a whole lot of fun.
It really was. I watched it like twice, I think, in the same weekend. The director of The People vs. George Lucas, which we both liked quite a bit.
That was great.
He also did Memory, The Origins of an Alien, which I absolutely
that
loved.
Great,
I think you liked it as well.
Might have assigned that to you.
And he did. No, you did not.
I think I did.
I believe you did not. What else did he do? Well, here he is now doing Lynch Oz, which is very similar to the format that was used for Room 237. However, this one's much more rooted in reality, I think. So it's a look at how David Lynch has been influenced by The Wizard of Oz more than anything else It's for all of his movies.
Okay.
And they have a number of directors talking about
it. Are they reaching here, or is this like an actual thing?
There's a little reaching. It's people that are smarter than me. Alexander O. Philippe is the director. I hope I'm saying that correctly. And it's broken into chapters. There's six chapters, and it goes with Amy Nicholson and then Rodney Asher, who directed. He does chapter two. He's the one who directed Room 237, strangely enough. And then we got John Waters doing chapter three. And then we have Karen Kusama, who does chapter four. She's a filmmaker. And then Justin Benson, along with Aaron Moorhead, they do chapter five. They split that. And then David Lowery, my boy, does chapter six, which is entitled Dig. And they're talking about their own work at times, and they're talking about how it all always goes back to The Wizard of Oz, like I said. And at first they're kind of...
Oh, wait, I'm sorry. Can I come up with breaking news? Sorry, I wouldn't do this. It wasn't important. I assigned you Memory, The Origins of Alien, back in April of 2020.
I think you probably have your
We
notes
gambled.
Wrong.
That was during COVID. Those were our first COVID games.
I love Memory, so my memory does not serve.
We gambled on, have you seen Dr. Strangelove?
Doesn't make any sense that you would assign me a movie that's that good that I would like that much.
Sorry.
And it has nothing to do with music, if I remember.
Yeah, I know it upsets you.
All right, so at first they're kind of, it seems like they're reaching at times. Let me also say that the opening of this, I guess it's the filmmaker standing on stage with a curtain behind him, and it's just the way that it's shot. I was like, because I got a screener of this, and I wasn't sure I was going to watch it. I didn't know what I was getting into. It was before I even looked up the director, like what he had directed. And once I looked up the director, I'm like, oh, I have to watch this no matter how bad it gets. I have to get to the end of this because of those other movies. The opening... It concerned me a lot. It just looked very flat. It looked cheesy. They were using, I know what they're going for. They were going for that David Lynch Twin Peaks look, which is kind of flat and surreal in the worst way to use that word, I guess. Just, you know what I'm talking about? Like the David Lynch, like some of the modern techniques that he uses mixed with the old techniques. Sometimes it looks really cheesy, but it's David Lynch. They're doing that with this.
I noticed that.
And I was like, oh no, is that the filmmaker on stage with the curtain behind him? Oh God. And then the curtain opens and I'm like, what are we watching here? But then it finds its groove right after that. So do not be afraid. Do not be scared of the opening of this. What ends up happening is a very, very interesting conversation from seven different people who are very well spoken. They understand film very well. And it's not like, it's not popcorn. It's not jumping all around. They each get their own chapter and they each bring something different to the program. And it's really interesting to talk about, I think, the Yellow Brick Road and The Wizard of Oz.
Did you mention the filmmakers involved?
Yeah, I named all of them, including David Lowery, who did Ghost World.
That's right.
He actually admits, a ghost story. He actually admits in this, that, you know, he grew up loving Spielberg, as so many people did, and he directs actors to just look with awe into the sky, which is a Spielberg shot. And he says that he's still, what this movie comes down to a lot is about influence and like artist influence and inspiration, where it comes from. And of course, Wizard of Oz, so many people can pull from Wizard of Oz because it really is like the ultimate coming of age story, right? And it's the ultimate story, not even in a sexual way, but like, we're all like, you know, in our house and we have our comforts, but then we have to go and become adults and like go out in that crazy world of all the insanity. And like, that's what Lynch is always trying to get at. Cause he's terrified of becoming an adult still, I think, as many of us are. We're, you know, all the unknowns. And, so it is also interesting, you know, with the AI conversations that continue to, deepen as the days go by. And it's like, what is AI? And like who AI is just pulling off of other human beings' experiences who should probably be compensated. And so ultimately, if you liked Room 237, you're going to get a lot out of this. Just language of film and the way people talk about movies, if nothing else. But the inspirations, the narrative threads, interesting themes when thought of in conjunction with the AI discussions, like I said, that continue to gather steam. And I really, really enjoyed this movie. It went down pretty smooth, but was challenging when it needed to be, which was throughout, because David Lynch is so
goddamn
challenging.
You saw this in theaters.
No, I got a screen.
Either way, it's in theaters now.
This might be a dumb question. Yeah. If you are not well-versed in all of David Lynch's catalog, and you're still trying to catch up on some, is this going to spoil it? Will this pique the interest and inspire you to go out and watch more David Lynch?
I think it might give you a better footing, because his movies are so... I love something from every single David Lynch movie I've seen, with the exception of maybe Inland Empire, which is just too challenging for me, and I hate the format, which was shot on video. Not even high def, if I recall. But I have not seen all of his Twin Peaks. I have not seen all of either of the Twin Peaks. My parents loved it when I was, you know, younger. but every single one of his movies and his short films, I've seen all of those multiple times, and I can't access a lot of it. And I think seeing this first and then maybe watching a David Lynch movie afterwards, it might give you
a little,
because they draw a lot of parallels for you. They connect a lot of dots. Some of them might be right. Some of them might be wrong. I don't know. Either way, David Lynch is like one of a kind, and I usually give him a pass, whereas a lot of surrealist filmmakers I do not give a pass to, but I always got the sense that David Lynch knows exactly what he's doing and he can't help himself. He can't help but make the movies. He's not deliberately drawing outside the lines, I don't think. I think that he's actually, that's how his mind works and that's what he does. And this, it comes from a joyful place and an expressive place, and he's trying to figure things out. I think he's trying to figure out life through telling stories. And I see a lot of surrealist films, and you know too, Brian, like Avery, like the quirky films that are quirky for the sake of quirk.
Sure,
and
of course.
Like even Groupers, like when I made Groupers, I made sure that every single character in there was based on something I had seen or something that meant something to me. Even like my crazy character Talkie, like that comes from, who's a mute, that comes from an actual guy who I had seen before. And a lot of the stuff that winds up in Lynch's movies are from actual dreams that he had or from his interpretation of The Wizard of Oz, that it turns out from the time he was a child. What's fun too is that at first they're trying to pick up the crumbs, and like they're showing an interview with Lynch, like, and he's in his workshop or something, and then they zoom in and there's like a 8x10 printout of Judy, or actually a scene, a shot from Wizard of Oz, like pinned up in his work. So obviously that's before you really get to the crux that he openly loves The Wizard of Oz. And it's already known my favorite movie of his is Wild at Heart. And like, that's very on the nose. It's suggested later on that Mulholland Drive, which I mistakenly thought was Mulholland Falls, because a lot of people fucked that up. And Giovanni let me know a couple weeks ago. That was a fuck up on my part. But an argument's made that Mulholland Drive is even more about The Wizard of Oz and inspired by The Wizard of Oz than Wild at Heart is, which actually has, you know, a whole lot of language from the, I don't know if you remember, but
no,
they're talking about, there's a fairy godmother in there. There's a wicked witch in there.
Interesting. They never put that together.
It's all there. If you're watching it, there's no denying it, because it's so on the nose when you're watching it.
Well, right? I don't remember that from when I saw it fucking years ago.
Well, you need to watch it multiple times, because it's that good of a movie. My God, is that Wild at Heart great?
Probably got to revisit it, honestly.
I love it so
much.
Maybe
I'll watch it alone.
I love it so much. Yeah, so I recommend this to film lovers. You don't even have to be a David Lynch aficionado. I think it'll give you a better understanding. And I know it did for me, for sure.
All right.
Like, they got this one excerpt from him. I was kind of hoping he would show up, because, you know, it's a bunch of filmmakers. I'm sure that he was involved to some extent. Would have liked to have him to shown up maybe for Chapter 7. To kind of admit to come clean with some stuff. That would have, I think, made this a great movie in my
mind.
Clear
some stuff up, address some rumors.
But there's a clip from The Tonight Show with Jay Leno, of all people, and it's when Lynch is on there promoting one of his movies, and he goes, he's just in the middle of the interview, goes, "I'd just like to say hello to my friend Judy. Hello, Judy. I know you're out there." And Leno, who's completely clueless, as most people would be, I think if I was interviewing Lynch, I don't think I would have connected the dot. And he's like, "Is it an open-ended relationship you got here?" And all this, but you know, it is just so funny watching David Lynch saying hi to like Judy Garland, essentially, because he holds it so close to his heart.
It's that
movie.
Perfect kind of movie that would seep in like in childhood, right, and like grab a hold of you. Especially, I imagine the man grew up in the 1950s, probably.
In a very idealistic Midwest, right? Yeah. I mean, he is the epitome. Boise, Idaho is where he was born. And I know he spent a lot of time in Manhattan. And then when he was young, he went to Philadelphia. And that's where the nightmares started to come. Oh, no. His dreams turned to nightmares when he saw the underbelly of society for the first time in Philadelphia. And that's where Eraserhead was born.
Oh, boy.
Very interesting. But, I mean, the man's a mad genius, obviously.
Speaking of
I don't think there's any denying that.
That's right.
Speaking of watch-alongs, we just did The Beastmaster last week, and I think it went over pretty well.
That was enjoyable.
I think it was.
That's right.
Children were thrown into the fire.
Children were.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. All right, so, yeah, Lynch,
multiple.
Oz. Something else I was going to say about it. I could, you know, go on and on. Let me see my notes here.
Come on, Lynch, Oz.
Yeah, I just wrote it down. And David Lowery, what I was starting to say is he actually admits that the idea, this hurts, the idea for a ghost story. I don't know if the idea, but like he says, "I continue to pull from E.T. with my movies today." And then they cut the Halloween scene.
Because he's covered in a blanket.
And he's dressed up to look like a ghost. And then a ghost story, he looks much like E.T. as a ghost. Well, actually, E.T. was the, whatever. There was a ghost in that scene. I think that
One of the kids.
He was dressed like a girl, I think.
Yeah, and put it inside of.
I think Drew Barrymore might have
actually
been a ghost.
No. I think was he both? Anyway, whatever. Who gives a shit?
I just thought. But yeah, very interesting, very fun. I recommend you check that out. I wish it was streaming right now, but
I think E.T. was a ghost for Halloween, but they got him out by dressing him as like a lady, like got him out away from the feds.
Mm. Yeah, I think you might be right. I don't know. I just saw the clip. I wish that I remembered it, but the brain is it's decrepit.
Is food?
Well, I was on the road for like 12 hours over the course of 36 hours.
Oh, wow.
That was a lot to you. Yeah.
Plus Duran Duran thrown in there.
And Duran Duran. Yeah, that'll blow your mind.
No, unexpected.
Unexpected Duran Duran concert. Yeah.
All right, take a break.
Let's do that.
I'm not sure why we're doing this, but break time, and then we'll come back with a little beanpole, a little This Mountain
Gotta
Life.
Gotta pay the bills there, Barbara.
Next. You want to talk?
Yeah, Lynch Oz. Lynch backslash slash. Lynch slash Oz. It's a little hard to find right now as far as the title, even on IMDb. So that's the title. I know that sometimes we're not great at saying the name of the movie while going, especially when I just went on and on about it for so long. So Lynch Oz is the name of that one.
You want to talk a very fun movie or an even more fun movie?
Let's talk the funnest of fun.
All right, Beanpole.
Yes.
It's a 2019 film directed by Cantalir Belentov.
Nailed it.
Cantalir Belentov. I didn't bother writing down the stars' names because I was having trouble even writing it, and I feel like reading it would be a bridge too far. 93% of Rotten Tomatoes. You can stream this on Showtime, or you can rent it as I did. This is a Russian film.
Mm-hmm.
It was submitted for Oscar consideration.
Mm-hmm.
Did not garner an Oscar nomination, but
was not considered.
It was considered. It was not honored. It was there being Russia, official entry.
Apparently they didn't get the call.
One country gets an entry. One entry per country.
Yeah, you can't have like Canada taking up all the, right?
I don't believe Canada's eligible.
Of course they are. Victoria Mirashchenko. Mirashchenko.
Do you think Black Bear should be up for best foreign film?
Mirashchenko. It's international film. So yeah, why not? Victoria Mirashchenko.
You're reading the names.
Because they were great.
They were great, but I was intimidated.
Vasilisa Paralegina.
Someone remixed this into a song.
And then Andre Baikov, who I have to assume
sounds just like Google Translate.
Was Sasha in there, who was the boy who shows up for a minute here.
Diego Luna.
Andre Bike off. But yeah, the two lead females are fantastic. So why don't you set up the story there, Bri?
Ooh, this is a tough one. So this takes place at the end of World War II in Russia, of course, and it is set at a sort of ad hoc makeshift military hospital. A lot of soldiers are recovering from mild to devastating injuries sustained in the battlefield, and Beanpole refers to the titular character, that is her name, nickname. She is tall, very tall.
Very tall.
Very thin, very lanky. I would describe her as lanky.
Mm-hmm.
She would be a star in the WNBA, but not in 1945.
Because there wasn't.
There was no such thing. And it's about them treating... it starts off with them treating soldiers. There's a sort of weathered doctor who's sort of seen it all, and he can't wait to get back to his regular life after this horrificness. And
this is from Nick Eats Cake. I don't know if you set that up.
I did not. Thank you for saying that. We said it earlier, but I didn't say it this time. Nick Eats Cake assigned this to us. And yes, a character from Beanpole's past comes back into the frame and complicates things.
Yeah, so I loved the construct of the story that was inspiring, I almost want to say, as far, and I have to do this because I think it's the hook, if there is a hook for this movie, but it's not set up until the hour point. And this movie is 2 hours and 19 minutes. This movie is...
It feels much longer than Little Mermaid.
Hard to access. It's not very accessible. There is a lot going for this movie. However, I think the best part of it is the construct of the story, which is this. Beanpole is early on in the movie. We see that she's with a little kid. She's watching. Turns out she's watching that little kid for her, like a toddler, like a 3-year-old.
In a weird juxtaposition, he has some kind of dwarfism. He's a very small child.
And she's
very tall.
In charge of this kid because his mother is still at war or was still on the battle, has not returned from war yet. And Beanpole turns out is not the greatest caretaker. She has...
she's a nurse. You'd think she'd be better.
She has these episodes where she just kind of loses consciousness and does a lot of clicking.
Yeah, she does a lot of... almost like a seizure.
It is seizure-like. And one thing leads to another and the child's no longer around. And... it becomes known when her friend comes back, the mother is looking for the child and she goes, well, that sucks. You now owe me a kid. Mm-hmm. And it's already been established that Beanpole hates sex so much that when she goes off with a young man who thinks that he might get some, he comes back bloodied with a broken arm. Mm-hmm. Turns out it didn't go well with him and Beanpole. We didn't see it.
Well, Beanpole had a leverage, literally physical leverage.
And so she hates the idea of sex, mm-hmm. at least with men, to the point that she like
destroys. It manifests itself as physical.
Yeah, and now her only way of making up for her misdoing is to actually become impregnated for her friend, which she has to at least consider. And that is heavy shit. Mm. And that's a great jumping off point, but it takes an hour to get there with this movie. And I don't want to say that there's payoff, even though there is some stuff that sticks with that, but that's not necessarily where that story ends up going for very long. So beyond that, this movie is just one of the richest movies I've seen as far as texture goes, as far as color, and the greens are just everywhere, right? The very first note I took was just so much green. There's just every scene has green and red, but mainly green all over it.
And there's also very little score, minimal score, almost none.
Now, beyond this movie... I mean, there's some really interesting things, and just technically, like the other character, I think her name's Masha. She gets nosebleeds.
Masha and the bear.
I don't know how they time the nosebleeds because she'll be sitting there and it'll be like a long take, no cuts or anything, and all of a sudden her nose starts bleeding.
That was impressive.
Did they write that in because this actress just has nosebleeds? Or
is there a squib in her nose?
How are they doing that? That might have just been CGI. I don't know, but I was fascinated by this. Did you look up the director?
I did not.
Oh my God, that's the best part of this movie, I think.
Please tell me.
Imagine the director. I want you to, you've seen Beanpole.
I have.
Very, very heavy subject matter.
Sure.
There was one laugh, and I don't even think it was supposed to make you laugh. It just made me laugh, and it happened on the bus later.
Okay.
With the Beanpole.
Yeah, sure.
Devoid of levity.
Right.
I'm not even sure I'm getting, I think I'm missing a lot of the cultural references.
So, yeah, sure.
Because context, I'm not, the context is lost on me quite a bit. So I'm mainly just zeroing in on the set design and the richness, like I said, of the stock, the footage, and it looked great. Imagine the director. Like, do you even know if it's a male or a female?
No, I know that his or her name is Cantilier.
Okay, what does this person look like in your head? Just paint a picture.
Oh, actually, probably resembles David Lowery a bit. I'm thinking maybe a mustachioed, maybe a burly.
Okay, I don't know if there's gonna be any payoff here at all, but. Okay. Go to IMDb and just take a look at this.
Oh.
Look at this person.
Hold on, wait. Beanpole.
Fascinating.
Let me look up.
We'll pay it off here in a second. Beanpole. Thanks for being patient, everybody.
I'm excited for this. Director Cantemir.
I mean.
Oh.
That's not who you imagine.
No, that's a joyous human being.
Joyous young boy who looks like he's on his way to some kind of EDM concert or something.
He was at the Duran Duran show.
He could have been with somebody's kid at the Duran Duran show. This kid was born in 1991. He has no busy making a movie of this kind of heft. Granted, he is Russian. God knows what kind of things he saw that would relate back to this movie as it is set in Russia. But you would never guess that this fresh-faced youngster... God, I sound old and feel old as I say this, but look at this kid. 1991, he was born. And this isn't the first heavy movie he made. Nick Eats Cake was telling me about Closeness, which was his first movie. Nick has not been able to watch it. As much as he likes Beanpole, he's not been able to sit down and watch Closeness because it was very controversial at the time.
Oh, really?
That Cantemir, the director.
Sorry, Cantemir. Yeah,
Cantemir.
I've not seen that.
Included real life executions.
Oh dear!
In the footage. Oh, so if you're going to sit down and watch Closeness, you get to watch actual human beings murder.
I don't mind
snuff.
That.
Yes, it's an actual snuff, much like Bowling for Columbine ends up being, because that is considered the most successful snuff film of all time. I saw a documentary about that. They named
It was bowling for Columbine.
Bowling for Columbine. So anyways, kid's obviously a fucking genius, but I was just kind of in awe. Like, there's no way I could even dream of making a movie like this, because there's such reserve. And it's fantastically acted, and every frame looks amazing.
Yes, it is.
There's just so little going on the surface, and
I was thinking. Oh, go ahead.
It's hard for me to. Even just sitting talking to you every week, I just can't. I have such a hard time being reserved, let alone when you have all that equipment and such great actors, not to have them do something.
I was observing this would have been a very tough watch in a theater.
Oh, yeah.
Like, I would have been trapped. I would have wanted to escape. You might find this hard to believe, but I score it very low on the fun scale.
Yeah, I don't find that hard to believe. Apparently, also, he walked off of... The Last of Us. He was the director on The Last of Us most recently, and apparently he had creator differences.
Oh.
He probably said, I don't want them to be running from anything. I want them just to be talking about mushrooms for a couple hours and maybe try and smother one another at one point.
In addition to child death, there's also euthanasia and sexual assault.
Yeah, it's a heavy, heavy film, guys. I don't know if we're selling anybody, but...
So far, I can't think of a single reason one would see this film.
There's one of the least sexy nude shower scenes.
Yeah, and then there's I'm thinking what's also equally as unsexy, I think, is when she's bathing by herself later, when Masha is bathing by herself.
That's right.
And it's just so the if you do sit down and watch it and you get as far as the child smothering scene, the direction that must have been happening off screen was so fucking effective for the child death scene, which, you know, where does this show take us? You never know, right? Here we are talking about a child death scene.
That's right, being very effective.
The little kid's hand and what it's doing, it's just so subtle, but works so well. And there's a lot of great direction. There's a lot of great things going on here. Also, it could be some smoke and mirror. Like, look at this fresh-faced kid, and he's doing a whole lot of nothing to great effect for some people, but I wasn't able to access it. So you just got to, like, say, maybe I don't get it. He's a genius. I don't know. You know what I mean? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Is there some of that going on?
It's tough, because as much as I want to admire this movie and admit that it's good and it's effective and it's evocative, it's not enjoyable.
No, well, no, Brian, I mean, not every movie. We're going to continue to have this conversation year after year. I mean, movies aren't meant to be enjoyable every time.
Interesting theory.
You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, it's like reading an article in the newspaper. Like, are you reading it for it to be art? Interesting?
Perfect analogy.
I mean, it's not a bad analogy, right?
It's apt.
See what I'm saying, though?
No.
It's not like every movie's a meal. I mean, like, well, even that, like, you sit down, you have nothing but spinach and Brussels sprouts. You know, it's going to do great things for your body and even your mind, but it's not going to be enjoyable.
That's right. You can acknowledge that a meal is well made, but it's not for you.
But an article as well. It helps you learn the world. See through other people's eyes and experience other people's existences, right? Yeah. Right?
It's a tough watch. Tough watch.
Well, that's been established.
Tough watch.
I feel like everyone knows that much.
Tough watch.
I feel like everyone who's listening knows that it's a tough watch, bro.
I had a hard time with this one.
I'm running out to see it.
Is anyone going to
watch it?
Is any single person going to watch this because of what they just heard?
Yeah.
I mean,
there are people who listen to the show who are like, you know.
Finally, some tragedy.
Some real film aficionados. And if there's one they're not familiar with and has been assigned, goddammit, they're going to see it. Wait! Beanpole was clicked through and purchased this week.
Oh, well, no. Yeah. I mean, that was before we talked about it.
In anticipation.
I should definitely be yelling, ooh, look at this. The cinematographer is just as young looking. I would have never guessed this either. She's very, very young.
She? I don't know about that.
She did lens, as my buddy Greg Srivasti would say. She was a cinematographer.
She lensed this movie?
The Last of Us, and she lensed Beanpole as well. And it's one of the best looking movies I've seen in recent memory. It looks phenomenal. It looks fantastic.
Well made movie.
You've seen Gunda. You've seen Gunda?
No.
It's about as fun as this one. It's the black and white movie about the pig. Yeah. And there's a smothering that happens. A child smothering a piglet smothering that happens early in Beanpole. I mean, Gunda. They're the same movie in my head in many ways.
I got to start ranking movies on funness, like an actual like codified funness scale.
I thought you've been doing that this whole time.
I informally.
He's been doing it forever. He just identified the fact that that's how he was.
That's right.
Recently. That's the only thing that's changed. All right. Let's talk about a movie that I don't know if you call This Mountain Life fun by Grant Baldwin, listener.
By comparison, though.
Considering I saw it right after Beanpole, it was a lot of fun.
It's in,
joyous.
It's eye-opening. It's beautiful. It's a lot of things, and this it's tragically, life tragically
it
overlooked.
It's a 2018 documentary directed by Grant Baldwin. He, sharing a name with our, no, I did that bit. He of the music you hear every time you fire up this podcast, 83% of Rotten Tomatoes, this streaming on Prime Video, a brisk, no pun intended, 77 minutes. Catalogs a few different stories, none of which are related other than they take place on or around mountains. But the main story, I would say, maybe the longest running story, is a mom and daughter team who are attempting to traverse, is it? Wait, they're going from Vancouver to Alaska.
Skagway, Alaska, yeah. And it's the only story that continues throughout. It's the through line in the documentary.
By what?
They have a bunch of other vignettes throughout, little standalone stories, including, but not limited to, the very first one, which it's just a perfect open for the movie. And I even showed Atticus a lot of clips from this because he got a lot out of it. And as I was watching it without him, I'm like, oh, I can't wait to show him this. So it opens up with this old timer who's out there in the woods, I mean, in the snow, open snow up in the mountains. And it really is, it's shining a light on a particular a region of North America, which is in between where that mother-daughter team walked reverse from. And it's the equivalent of going from Seattle to Mexico, right? Mm. It's like the top of Washington State down to Mexico. Yeah, it's very, very long. So, but it goes the other way. It goes, like we said, from Vancouver, which is the bottom of Canada on the West Coast, all the way up to Skagway, which is up in Alaska. And which is crazy because I took a cruise from Vancouver to Skagway, and it took 2 days by boat to get up there. And the mom and daughter actually walked this. It's like over 2,000 miles. It's insane.
It's absurd.
And it's not a straight line. It's over mountains and across rivers.
And it's not even on a walking path. They are traversing snow.
Over 6 months. So that's the through line. But it opens up with this old timer, and he's out there, and he's got his snowshoes, and you don't know what he's doing. And he's talking about how
he's counting his steps.
It takes him 8 to 12 hours, and he's counting his steps, and he's, you know, using this little device to kind of look through. And you think it's just a mountaineer or something, right? And I'm thinking, okay, where are we? Grant asked us to watch this movie when he gave us the song. That was the only thing he wanted to trade. That was like 2 years ago. And I've been, I don't want to say dreading it, but you know, people that paid, I've been bumping them up. Sure. And you always are worried that like you're going to see something that like a, you know, friend of the show made, and you're gonna hate it, right?
Yeah, sure. How do you possibly spin it? You know, it's just to say nice things.
As I'm watching this movie, I'm like, I felt like such an asshole. I'm like, this is so good. I can't wait to talk. So it's got this old guy, and he's in his snow boots, and then they pull back and they use this drone shot, and you see that he's doing snow art, which he actually says. I rewatched it,
right?
And he's making this giant like snowflake that's like impossibly giant.
It's a football field wide.
Bigger than that, maybe. He said that by the time he's done, it's the equivalent of a marathon that he's walked.
That's right, because he's making the individual crystals of this crazy snowflake with every footstep.
Atticus, like, his eyes were fucking wide. He's like, oh my, wow. Like, he was, like, blown away by it.
Please tell me Jillian saw this, because I thought of her and how no person should spend this much time doing anything.
Yeah, she would be upset with the mom and daughter, I think.
No, the snow artist.
Oh, the snow artist. She came in towards the end when Alex and I were watching one of the end scenes, and she heard them talking about how far they traversed, and she goes, why would anyone do that to themselves? That was her
too
contribution.
Much exertion.
It was absurd. They had food drops. They would literally get dropped in by drone, right?
And Grant and Jenny were doing really impressive things, and I hope Jenny was involved in this, and I'm not giving her too much credit here, Grant. I know you're the director, but I know she also wrote this, and you guys make films together, so he was talking about how they were always trying, you know, get creative things and do interesting things, and like they put the GoPro on the food box that they dropped out. That's a fun little thing. Some really interesting things he was doing. He was telling me he was holding the drone for some of the shots with the nun. Mm. They have this whole section, this scene where it's like these nuns that live up in the middle of the woods in this beautiful cathedral. Dominican nuns. And then he's got a shot of one of them across country skiing, and it looks like an SNL sketch at first glance.
He's in her habit.
But then you realize she absolutely knows what she's doing. That's how she gets around every day. And it was like nothing I'd ever seen before. And he was telling me they had a really hard time because they had a beautiful shot there. I don't know if you picked up on it, but it almost looked like it was a trick shot. Like she was in one place and they were kind of moving the camera to make it look like she was moving. But no, she was moving. And that, from what I understand, he was, or here, his camera guy were holding the drone to get the perfect shot. They weren't even operating the drone at that point.
Interesting.
But it was a really effective shot. Who else do they have in here?
They had a mountain climber. An older guy who was a mountain climber. They had a rock artist named Bearhard. Mm-hmm. Remember the rock artist?
He's
been all day making rock art.
He's towards the end. The avalanche story, which...
The avalanche story was great.
It was really well executed and edited together, too. It leaves you wondering right up until the story. Like, you're in that story, mm-hmm. and it's just a small little part of the movie. This movie is a celebration of the mountains, of that type of life, like all the different things that the mountains have to offer. Right. This is a movie like if
and what
you
it
like,
means to these people. Like you get it. I would never want to do it, but I get it.
Exactly. I mean? Like people that have just given their lives over to the mountains, and you get it. You don't smell it. Like in that guy's house towards the end, it looks gorgeous. And right. I'm thinking like, I'm glad I don't smell the rotting food that might be in there, but it's absolutely beautiful. And yeah, it's a love letter to the mountains. Right. And I immediately like text my friends who love the mountains, who I know, I get a lot of camp people. I'm like, you guys got to see this movie. You're going to absolutely love this movie.
Have they not heard of it?
No one really has heard of this. There's just too much noise out there. This is also a movie that was made up in Canada. They're Grant and Janie are Canadians, and you know, Canada makes some really good stuff, and it's not really all about distribution and, you know, getting all the money back. It's just about making, from what I understand, it's not made by the Hollywood machine. So it can get lost with, you know, not enough PR. So the Modest Living mountain couple, I don't even know if they're a couple, but they seem so fulfilled. And that's towards the end. Like, that's really what kind of drives this whole message home. It's like, what are we doing? Like, what, you know, we just finished up Succession last night.
Right.
And then you watch like a movie like this and you're just like, so many people are doing life wrong.
Yeah. What am I doing with versus what are they doing right now?
Yeah.
It's funny. I made two notes towards the end of the movie. One, I just can't imagine looking at a beautiful snow-capped mountain and thinking, I've got to climb that.
Mm-hmm.
So that's just an instinct that doesn't exist in me. I imagine most people.
Now you don't have anything, any of that?
No.
What about like hills in your neighborhood? You ever like just drive by and be like, oh, I'd like to be up there one day.
Sure. But okay. Now we're talking about like, you know, training and equipment and possibly dying.
Yeah.
And speaking of which, my other note was even pitching and breaking down a tent like the mom and the daughter did seems like an insurmountable task every single day. Like that was miserable.
Yes. When I talked to Grant, that was most of my questions I had were like, you know, nerdy filmmaking right. and like how much was he actually out there with them? And as I suspected, he's with them in the very beginning. And then at the end, when they get to where they right. end up and the middle part, like he left that up to them. They had some GoPros and like he was saying that the best parts of what happened to them out there, they're not filmmakers. So they didn't grab, like they almost got caught in an avalanche. They didn't cover that. There was like, and
sure,
I'm like,
their first instinct is not to grab a camera.
It felt like they got a shit ton to me, but you know, he's just thinking of the stuff that they missed while they were out there on that journey. But that doesn't come through. You're not going like, wow, this mom and daughter are not delivering, because they are. And it's a perfect amount of suffering, like human suffering, as well as the beauty that makes it all worth it. That they see.
That's funny you mention all that, because another note that I wrote down, not knowing the connection to Grant Baldwin at the time, the crew has to do all this while carrying equipment.
But what you might not have heard is the crew wasn't there.
No, they weren't there the whole time. I understand that. But when they were, they're on the ground. They're doing the thing, you know?
Yeah.
It's tough sledding, it's, pun intended.
How sad is this? That this movie is just, you know, it's the kind of movie that would be up for Oscars just 10 years ago. And now it's just, no one's talking about it. And I'm not just saying that because of Grant's relation to this here program. It's a very, very good movie.
It is.
And I'm glad that, I talked to you after you had seen it and I broke it to you then that it was Grant.
Yeah, but I enjoyed it legitimately. This is a very well-made documentary.
This Mountain Life, we highly recommend. You see it and rate it and, you know, tell your friends about it. And these guys should be making more movies. So fantastic.
I don't know about that.
I mean, they are. They're continuing to work. They don't need a whole bunch of our help. I just want people to see it for the sake of the movie because it's so good.
It can be streamed on Prime. I assume you can rent it a couple of places, but it's accessible.
Oh, and did you pick up on how cool? This is another nerdy question I have, but there's some great drone shots that he has from above, and it's like going over, you know, straight down. It's that straight down look, and it's going over like brooks, and like it's just one continual shot of mountain treetops. And it's, forgive me if I get it backwards, but I think it's snow covered, and then it's slowly but surely like turning into not
spring or summer or whatever. Yeah.
He did that like by getting two shots of two drones at two different times of the year and then melding them together.
Oh, wow, really?
He did all those effects himself. And I just thought it was CGI that he paid like some company to do. No, he did all that. He did all the 3D photos, you know, that stuff that you see from like we first saw it in The Kid Stays in the Picture where they take 2D.
The photo moves.
Yeah, he did all that stuff.
Wow.
Yeah, I mean, if you're looking for some of that in your film, which
Grant, I'm going to hit you up pretty soon.
You might want to hire Grant over
there. Start post-production.
He has the time. All right. Ah, that's good.
Nice.
Yeah.
Enjoyable.
Mm-hmm.
Fun.
I'm trying to think of what else I saw.
What else you saw?
Oh, Lynch, Oz, and This Mountain Life. They couldn't be more different, but, and then Beanpole. Wow. Yeah.
Hey. Wow.
And then Little Mermaid as well.
Little Mermaid.
Shows a service, huh?
Really is. And speaking of which, thanks you guys for, thanks Nick from Nick Eats Cake and Grant Baldwin for assigning us interesting movies. Always enjoy the assignments. Always appreciate the assignments.
Yeah, there might be one movie. I can't even remember what it is, though, so maybe there's none that a listener has assigned us and I'm like, ugh, I got nothing out. Even the ridiculous 3.5 hour long
Seattle Mariners. I enjoyed that.
I got something out of
about that.
Yeah.
Right. Now, there is stuff to be taken away from Beanpole.
Yeah, for sure. It's the kind of movie that we'll continue to probably refer to for years to come on this show. Right? It might even make a list.
That's a real Beanpole moment. All right. Thanks, you guys. And thank you to Florence Brummer for the upcoming top five this week. Top five princesses. Look for that.
You get clever at all there, Brett?
Minorly? Mm-hmm. Not really. The only cleverness is what I didn't include.
Oh.
Oh, boy.
I know.
The negative space.
It's the notes you don't play.
It's the characters you don't choose.
It's the characters. That's right. Well done. All right, cool. Thanks to, like I said, Nick Eats Cake, Grant Baldwin. Thanks to Candy Cigarettes for being our featured artist this week. Check them out at AndersonandBryan.com. AndersonandBryan.com, there you go. Check out the listener art. Check out the Amazon link that you can use for all your shopping needs at no cost to you.
I missed the perfect dovetail segue as to what we're going to be watching next.
What are we watching next?
From the listeners. Are you down for doing two? You ready to do two?
We'll see.
We're doing pretty good pace here. All right.
Okay.
Leif Norden. God damn it, Leif. I knew that. Son of a bitch. We'll talk soon, Leif, and you can yell at me either way, Leif. All right, Leif. I think it's Leif. I've known Leif forever, and I'm fucking up his name. All right. My Neighbor Totoro.
Okay.
Totoro. Even though it sounds like they say Torah. I've watched this already with Atticus. You can watch it with Dezza.
Did he enjoy it? It's a G-rated.
G-rated film. Yes. Ghibli. And you're going to enjoy it.
Okay.
And then Frank has had us, he's having us watch Band of Brothers, episodes 1 and 2.
Mm.
All right.
I may have already seen that.
Equivalent to 2 hours. So he has his faith. Probably wrongfully so, but he believes that if we're going to watch these two episodes, nothing will stop us from having to watch the rest.
We'll be compelled.
I don't have the bandwidth to do so, I'm afraid. So.
I do, but that doesn't make any difference.
Okay, so first two episodes, Band of Brothers, as well as My Neighbor Totoro. Totoro. Thanks to Frank and Leif. L-E-I-F is Leif, yeah?
I would say Leif.
Rafe Fiennes. Maybe Leif.
He mispronounces his name, though.
Could be Leif.
Hey, if you would like to be a $25 member of the Patreon Film Vault too, you can hear me mispronounce your name. And also, I think we're sold out at that level right now.
No, we're not. We have plenty of room. Everyone on board. Out. All right, coming up.
The $50 level is open, though, if you'd like to give us a topic.
Top 5 Princesses coming up soon, next, if you will. And until then.
We do it for Van Gogh.